Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to a special edition of Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics, and on this very special bonus edition, I had a chance to sit down and talk with legendary filmmaker Paul Schrader. The man has written some, unabashed classics: Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, The Mosquito Coast, all sorts of things. And his movies tend to take a very dark apocalyptic bent. They deal with, conflicted, lonely people experiencing some kind of crisis of faith. And that continues with his latest film, First Reformed, which is a tremendous movie. It stars Ethan Hawke as a priest who begins to have very radical ideas about spirituality and its place in the world today. It is very much a return to form for Schrader. So I wanted to talk to him about kind of coming back to his roots a little bit. And he talks about his Calvinist upbringing, transcendentalism in film, all sorts of things. It's a great listen. So I hope you check it out. Here is Paul Schrader.
I think one of the things that really what made me enjoy it is that I feel like we don't see very many movies like it anymore. It's his character, Toler, is the kind of guy who's really I'm trying to think of a way to put it. His outlook is very bleak.
You know who Richard Linklater is?
Yes.
Okay. When he saw the film, he spoke to Ethan, and he said nobody's even tried to make this movie in 50 years.
Yeah.
but when the ironies of it, even though it harks back to a older kind of intellectual cinema, It feels very much of the present too. And I can't fully explain that.
Well, I mean, I was thinking the same thing that for me, I am not a religious person. But I could relate to kind of the emptiness that he has,
Just
because of the way things are in the world today. Is that kind of where you were coming from?
Yeah. Well, certainly. I mean, if you're optimistic, you haven't been paying attention. As a film critic before I was a screenwriter, I've written a book on spiritual films. I always liked these films. I always said I would never make one. It's not me. I'm interested in sex and violence and action and empathy, and I'm not going to do a spiritual film. You won't catch me out there. And about 3 years ago, after a conversation with the director of EDA, and I was walking uptown New York, and I said, well, you're going to be 70 next year. It's time to write that movie you swore you would never write. And that's how it sort of started. And Ida, did you see Ida?
I know of
it. Kind of the Polish nun.
Yeah, I think I did see that.
Black and white film.
Yeah, I did see that, okay.
Yeah, so I said that it's time for me to make a film like that. So I was going to do it in black and white, but I had to do it in color. But I still kept the square format from Ida.
What was it about that film that made you say, it made you change your entire perspective on wanting to do this kind of movie?
It wasn't just that film. It was where I was in my life, but also what had happened to the film economy. Films that were once financially irresponsible are responsible because of the budgets have come down so dramatically. I was able to shoot this film in 20 days.
Wow.
30 years ago, it would have been 45 days. And I had made that film with Bret Easton Ellis, Canyons, So I knew now that I could make a film very, very inexpensively, and that maybe it wouldn't be irresponsible to make a spiritual film. Because I had always felt that I would never, one of the reasons I'd never write one is because I knew I'd never get it made. But now, but then I started feeling that I might be able to get one made now in this climate.
It's interesting because, you know, movies about faith are more popular than ever right now. You know, I don't know how this movie fits with that audience, though.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, there will be a certain amount of curiosity seekers. But that audience, where they come by the busload, you know, and buy the tickets in the rec room at the church, yeah, that's a whole different thing.
I think they'll seriously resent Total War, to be honest.
I took this on a seminary tour. I went to Calvin College, I went to Fuller Theological, I went to Yale Divinity with it. So I've talked to a lot of church people about it. And by and large, the reaction is very good, simply because this is a movie pitched at a secular audience that takes Christianity very seriously. And it's just the fact that this is a serious proposition. You know, we are not built on hate. We are not built on, simplicity. You know, you can be a serious intellectual person. You know, and that was the church I came from too. The two characters in my upbringing that were held out was, you know, C.S. Lewis as a Christian and T.S. Eliot as a Christian. You know, where you could be part of the world, part of the successful literature, and a faith-based person at the same time.
Is this an idea that's been percolating in your head for years? It feels like you're almost in the same headspace as Taxi Driver.
Well, yeah, it is that same character, you know, much further on. Same character as Light Sleeper, who's a drug dealer, who also kept a journal, you know. And as you get older, the problem shifts. So Taxi Driver is about the loneliness of a young man. And Light Sleeper is about the anxiety of a midlife man. And First Reformed is about the despair of an old man. So it's the same template, you know, as time progresses.
What made you decide to use climate change as sort of the vehicle, the heart of the movie?
Well, because, you know, humanity has been having a discussion for about 10,000 years. It's always been a hypothetical discussion. Why are we here? Where are we going? What will become of us? We'll have the discussion. Our children will have it. Their children will have it. And their children will have it. And now, all of a sudden, for the first time in the history of our race, we're thinking, maybe it's not hypothetical anymore. Maybe Homo sapiens, as now configured, won't see the end of this century. Well, talk about gravitas. Talk about, and more and more people are having this discussion. The very idea that in good times, which we are living in, you would say, I don't think we should bring a child into this world. You know, that's what people say during starvation, war. But now, you know, this discussion that this young boy has, I never had that discussion. But I know kids his age who have it.
It does sort of feel like, those who came before have, you know, kind of destroyed everything for everybody who's coming after.
And
leaving them to deal with it.
We are, if my parents were the greatest generation, we're the most selfish.
Was Ethan Hawke always your first choice for this role? Did you write with him in mind, or?
I did. You know, I try not to write with an actor in mind because it makes you a lazy writer. Because you're writing a speech and then you hear Al Pacino reading it and you say, "Oh, that's a great speech," or Denzel Washington, "Oh, that's a great speech." No, it's not a great speech. Denzel is a great actor. And so, but about halfway through, I started thinking of Ethan. You know, because this character, a troubled man of the cloth. There's a certain physiognomy involved. You know, there's a certain look, like Montgomery Clift in I Confess or something. Mm. You know, and Eden has that look and that age. And I started thinking, you know, I think, you know, he's just right for this now. And so I sent it to him, and he responded immediately.
I talked to Nicolas Cage a couple of months ago for Mandy, and you know, he's always got nice things to say about you. Did you ever think about casting him for it? Did he ever come across your mind for
it? No. This is a performance for a recessive actor. You can say a lot of things about Nick, but recessive is not that comes to mind. When I first met with Ethan, I said, you know, this is a lean-back performance. Mm. If you feel the audience getting interested in you, keep leaning away. I don't think I could give that instruction to Nick.
Right. But the movie is also very funny. You know what I mean? There's a lot of humor in it as well. And, you know, I don't know, it contrasts pretty nicely with some of the darker elements, you know?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, well, one of the reasons I cast Cedric is because we have such a propensity to stereotype ministers, particularly ministers of large congregations.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that, you know, I put almost anybody in there. In the case, you put anybody in there, and he's going to end up like Franklin Graham or Pat Robertson.
Yeah.
And people would just put him in that box. And so then I started thinking, how do I get outside that box?
Mm-hmm.
And having a black comedian, you know, sort of spared me. And also, I've been traveling around with Cedric. I was with him yesterday, and when you're going down the hall, somebody walks and they spot him, they light up. You know, he just has that kind of joy.
Yeah.
And you know, so I was able to use that presence. You know, when I cast him, I said, I didn't cast you to be funny. I cast you because of your essence, your vibe, mm-hmm. you know. And so that helped me out.
It's interesting because I think in the credits, he's not even listed as Cedric the Entertainer. It's listed by his regular name. I had totally forgotten that he was in the movie until I saw him.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you put Cedric as the Entertainer in the front credits, people are going to immediately think, where's the Entertainer?
Right. they'll come in expecting the funny guy, you know, not the role that he got. How was your experience shooting this one compared to some of your recent experiences? Did you, you know, you said this one took you only 20 days.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was 20 days because that's all needed.
Mm.
You know, you move very, very fast now, and particularly when you're not moving the camera, you can go fast. And if your crew is, if your talent is prepared. I felt very good about it, shooting it. It felt right.
Yeah. This feels like, I mean, at least for me, this is one of the best movies you've made. I really, really enjoyed it.
I'm very, you know, I feel a lot of gratification as well. You know, it feels completed.
I was like, do you feel like things are coming kind of full circle towards the end of your, you know? I don't know how many more movies you plan on making or if you're planning on something else right now.
Well,
it kind of feels like it's coming full circle a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, do you know the movie Ride the High Country?
I know of it. I don't think I've seen it.
There's it's an early Peckinpah film with Randolph Scott and Joel McRae. And they're old cowboys. And Scott says to McRae at one point, you know, Steve's the character's name, says, Steve, what do you really want? And Joel McRae gives an answer that Sam, in fact, had heard from his father, who was a preacher, and said, I just want to enter my house justified. So that's sort of what it feels like.
I would say that is like the perfect note to end on. But I want to ask one more question real quick before I leave. this is sort of a holy grail movie, a movie that you said you would never do, as you've done. Is there anything else that you want to do
that's on your mind? I have some things working on now. Very different kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing of this import, no.
Yeah. All right, Paul, this has been fantastic, man. I really appreciate it.
All right, that's my interview with Paul Schrader for his new film, First Reformed. You should definitely seek it out if it's in your area. Not only is it, like I said, a return to form for Schrader, but Ethan Hawke, man. Ethan Hawke is terrific in this. If this were coming out later in the year, I'd say it's a best actor-worthy performance. And it may still be. On occasion, some of these earlier in the year movies stick around long enough. They stick in the memory long enough that they still play a factor in the awards race. And I'm kind of hoping that's what happens here, at least for Hawke. He definitely deserves it. And Schrader deserves some accolades in his own right, especially after the last few years for him, which have been tough on the indie circuit, making a few really bad movies. Not completely his fault either. But First Reformed, like I said, is a return to form. This is the kind of movie he excels at, and he knocks this one out of the park. So definitely go check out First Reformed if it's in a theater near you. Thanks for listening to this special bonus episode of Cinema Royale. I'll be back with a fuller episode soon. Thanks. Bye.